The CDC recommends everyone born from 1945 to 1965 get a blood test for hepatitis C. Treatments are available that can cure this disease. So talk to your doctor about getting tested. It could save your life. A message from the CDC.
Let your creativity shine while learning the various facets of the baking and pastry field. With Henry Ford College's Certificate in Baking and Pastry, students will explore international cuisine and the art of garde-manger by preparing decorative food displays. For more information, please contact the Student and Culinary Arts Center by calling 313-845-1572 or visit them on the web at hfcc.edu/programs. The healthcare industry will continue to be one of the largest employers of college graduates. More jobs are expected to be with nursing than any other occupation. Are you ready to make a difference in the world? Are you looking for an education and career that has advancement? Right now, there is a high demand for nurses, both male and female. Breaking into the nursing career means getting an education. Henry Ford College offers an associate's degree in the nursing program. All graduates can acquire full-time employment upon passing the licensing examination for registered nurses. For more information, please call 313-845-6300. Once again, that's 313-845-6300. Or look us up on the web at hfcc.edu. Henry Ford College, the right education right now.
Necessarily represent those of WHFR or Henry Ford College. Good afternoon. This is WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. My name is Mike Holloway. I'm the host of this show. My guest this month is Phil Rosenbaum, and he is a certified hypnotist and limited licensed counselor. Phil, how are you today?
I'm very good, thank you.
Great. Glad you could make it. And now I want to know, of course, we're going to be talking about hypnosis, but first I want to know, what is a limited licensed counselor?
Okay, when you go through a counseling program, I went to Oakland University, and they have two programs there. They have a mental health counselor or school counselor. So there's only two choices there. And I chose mental health counselor. And after I got my degree, you get a master's degree. And then you do an internship. And if everything goes well, you become a limited licensed counselor. Now you have to continue seeing clients. You need to see at least 2,000 clients under supervision. And once you get that under your belt, then you have to take another test. And if all goes well, you become a fully licensed counselor. Mm-hmm. So I'm still in the process of becoming a fully licensed counselor.
Okay, but that is your goal, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, all right. Okay, well, how long have you been practicing hypnosis?
I've been doing it now for over 14 years. I'm not sure exactly. I don't remember the exact date where I started, but it's been at least 14 years or more.
Mm-hmm. So you obviously enjoy it, correct?
Oh yeah, it's quite an interesting, enjoyable, and there's a lot of nice things that come out of it. I feel there's so many different things you can do with hypnosis because there's just such a wide variety of areas where hypnosis can be helpful for. So people might, just as a quick example, they might come to see you for smoking, they might come to see you for weight loss, they might come to see you for sports improvement or for stress management, for having anxiety. Being in a school, there's a lot of kids who get what they call test anxiety. They go to take an exam and they get so anxious they can't even think clearly. So hypnosis can be really helpful for people like that to calm them down and help them do a good job. So there's just a whole wide variety of areas hypnosis can help with.
Right. I know some students can't even get out of bed if they have a big exam or something like that because they're so stressed out or whatever. So hypnosis does help them relax a little bit?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, they found that when people have a lot of stress, there's a number of things they can do, like go for walks or dance or do exercise or whatever. But actually the main thing that's helpful is kind of like deep relaxation and things like Tai Chi, yoga, meditation and hypnosis are really helpful for reducing stress. So it's a real...
Right. Good. So now when you do hypnosis, I mean, do people come to you and tell you what the problem is, or do you maybe take a little survey and find out what you think they might need? How does that work out?
Usually when people come in, I have them fill out a little form to begin with, just to kind of get a basic little idea of what's going on with them. But then after they fill out the form, they come into my room, and then I do what's called a more thorough intake. And this is actually part of a counseling intake that I do with them. So I find out all about their history, what kind of problems they've been experiencing, what their family life has been like, what it was like growing up for them, what their parents are like, if there's addictions, compulsions, all kinds of stuff, you know. And then, of course, I ask what's the main reason they're there today to see me for. So I get a pretty thorough understanding of what's going on. A lot of times they volunteer a lot of other information, too. And what's kind of interesting is sometimes people come in and they think they're really coming in for one problem, but it turns out it's really something else. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people either aren't aware of it or they're just not comfortable enough to talk about it at the beginning.
Right.
So once we get a little rapport going and they're more comfortable, then they're willing to share more of the real problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you put a person under, does, you know, certain things come out that maybe they didn't let you know when they were just coming to visit you at first? Does that kind of come out in hypnosis?
Yes, it does. Of course, the person always has to be willing to reveal whatever they're going to reveal. Like, I can't force anyone to say something or do anything against their will. In fact, one of the big things, I always do what they call a pre-talk when people first come in, because I want them to, there's so much misunderstanding about hypnosis, so many myths, that I want kind of like to clear the air. So I'll tell them stuff like, you're always in control of what's happening. If you're uncomfortable at any time, you can just open your eyes and come out of trance. You can't get locked into hypnosis. I think there was once a TV show where somebody supposedly is wandering the streets in hypnosis. Well, that's kind of ridiculous. That's not going to happen.
Right.
If a person was in a hypnotic trance and something happened to the hypnotist, say me or whoever the hypnotist was, passed out, they're not going to remain in trance indefinitely. What will happen is either they might just doze off for a few minutes, and once they wake up, they'll be back to normal, or else after a couple of minutes, they realize nobody's talking, and they just open their eyes and just come right out of trance. So you can't get stuck in hypnosis. That's one of the big myths.
Right. Know? Well, also, I think people are afraid that they're going to lose control and that you'll be able to tell them to do anything that, you know, you want them to, that if you tell them to go rob a bank, they'll go do that, or anything, you know, something that they normally wouldn't do.
Right.
I think they're afraid of losing control, aren't they?
Yeah, that's another big fear, and it's also a big misunderstanding, because we always tell them that they're never going to do anything that goes against their values or their moral beliefs, that if anything were ever asked of them that would go against their values, for example, either they just wouldn't respond at all, they'd say nothing, or else they just immediately snap out of trance. So you're not going to do anything in hypnosis that you wouldn't do in your everyday waking life. And you're always aware of what's happening. Now, hypnosis comes from a word that means sleep, but actually you're not asleep. You're just in a very, very relaxed state, but you're always aware of what's happening. You're always knowledgeable about what's being said and how you're responding. And you're not going to reveal any deep, dark secrets unless, of course, you want to. But you're always in control of what you say, and you're not going to do anything, again, that goes against your values or moral judgments or anything like that. So it's pretty safe, basically, because you're just going to reveal what you want to reveal.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes when you're in hypnosis, you're so much more relaxed, you're willing to let more stuff come out. So that's kind of helpful.
Right. I'm sure that's a big key. But people see these hypnotists on stage and they have people eating onions because they think it's an apple or whatever the case may be. And I'm sure that doesn't help the cause as far as clinical hypnosis goes on. But what do you say when people say, well, what I saw on TV that this person was doing that right. they normally wouldn't right. do? How does that work?
Okay, well, first of all, I always tell people that when you see a stage hypnotist, to begin with, he or she will kind of go through the audience and kind of screen the people to see who would be good subjects. So he only wants people up there that are going to be willing to go along with whatever kinds of suggestions he makes, and who also can go into a relatively deep state of hypnosis. And the people who go up on the stage, they're there for the fun of the show. A lot of them like to, they're kind of like exhibitionists in a way. They don't mind being up on stage and doing all these crazy things because they know nothing bad's going to happen to them, and it's kind of fun for them. So they don't mind, you know, appeasing the hypnotist and doing these ridiculous things. But even in that case, again, if anything were asked of them that went against their morals or values, they wouldn't do it, because that's never going to happen, even with a stage hypnotist. But in that case, they're willing to go along with all the silly stuff because they're there for the fun of the show, and they kind of like to ham it up, so they don't mind doing this nonsensical stuff.
Right.
But also, approximately 7 to 9% of the population can go into a very, very deep trance. And these are the people who you could actually put a needle through their arm and they won't feel it, or you can tell them to take a bite out of this onion and it's going to taste like an apple. And because it can go into such a deep trance, you can do amazing things with them. And so that's the kind of people the stage hypnotist tries to get up on stage, at least a few of them, you know, because
mm-hmm.
they'll be the great subjects. So they'll be the ones who really
right.
do the...
They're going to be more entertaining
exactly.
than everybody else. Now, how does a hypnotist like that screen people? What does he do? Just ask them certain questions, or
right.
how does that work?
He might go through the audience and he'll say, I'd like you to just try something, for example. Could you just put your arm up for a minute? Okay, now just imagine your arm is just stiff as a board. All right, now try moving it, and then he'll see what kind of response they have. And if a person can't move their arm, there's a good subject here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go up on stage.
Yeah, right. You're selected.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, that works out. Now, how long have you been doing this again?
A little over 14 years.
Okay, and what made you decide to do this?
Okay, years ago, I knew a psychiatrist who was offering a class in hypnosis, and he asked me if I was interested in taking the class. And I said, yeah, that sounds kind of interesting. So I signed up for it. And there are only about 5 or 6 of us in the class, but most of them were all very highly educated people. I mean, we had another PhD psychologist and a master level psychologist and a few other people like that. And each week, the teacher would cover a different topic. So like week one, he said, okay, today I'm going to show you how to use hypnosis to quit smoking. Week two, I'm going to show you how to use hypnosis to maybe reduce stress or reduce anxiety. And so each week he had something different to show us. I think around the 3rd or 4th week, he said, all right, this week we're going to play around with past life hypnosis. And I should mention that at the end of each session, he would do a group hypnosis. So he'd hypnotize everybody in the group. And the first week he did that, and I didn't feel anything at all. I just felt like no different. And I thought, I don't know, maybe I'm not a good subject or something. The second week he did another group hypnosis, and again, nothing seemed to happen. And I'm starting to wonder, does this stuff even work? You know, because I don't feel any different now than I did before. And I think the same thing happened about the 3rd session. The 4th session, he said, we're doing a group past life hypnosis. And he did a much longer induction, much more thorough, you know, taking you down stairs and down another set of stairs and just a whole bunch of stuff. And by the time he got done with the induction, I definitely felt like I was in a different state of mind. I thought, wow, this is the first time I really felt something happen. For myself, though, I really didn't get too much into a past life. I had little touches of maybe like living in Chicago or something, but it was very fleeting. But one of the other class members, who was a PhD psychologist, he was actually in tears. And so we asked him what happened. And he said, well, he was involved in some kind of war in Europe, I don't know how many hundreds of years ago. And all of his buddies that were fighting with him were either killed or severely wounded. And he said he too was badly wounded, and he was on the road all by himself. He didn't know what he was going to do. He was bleeding, and he was just in tears because he was just kind of like lost. And it seemed listening to this guy, it just seemed so real. I just couldn't imagine this guy making it up. So that really got me interested in the whole subject. Mm-hmm. I thought, wow, you know, this is pretty powerful stuff here.
Right. He knew so many details about the event and stuff. It's something where he just couldn't make it up, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. And then I thought, at some point I'd like to get into this. I wasn't for a number of years before I did actually go into a hypnosis training program, but that really got my interest.
Mm-hmm. You know? And real quickly, I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Phil Rosenbaum. He is a certified hypnotist and limited licensed counselor. Now, when you actually started to do it and you started to feel something, that opened up the door, so to speak, so that the next time you went a little bit deeper, until you really felt relaxed and could tell that you were under hypnosis?
You're talking about that original class?
Right.
I was
well,
taking?
Either that or just, you know, a one-on-one session. I don't know what your training was exactly, but
yeah, for
the
me,
more you went under,
right,
the more you determined that there was something to this and there were different effects.
Right. In fact, that's true of all people. The more you practice, like I teach people what's called self-hypnosis, mm-hmm. and so they can put themselves into a hypnotic state. And the more you do that, the deeper you're going to be able to go, you know,
right.
up to a point, of course, but you'll be able to keep going deeper for right. a while.
Right. And I have done some self-hypnosis myself, and it got to the point where, yeah, you do go deeper. And I went so deep one time, I scared myself. You know, I had to snap out of it because I didn't know what was going to happen mm-hmm. next, and I didn't want to continue. So, I mean, there is that aspect of it. But again, kind of what you said earlier, if there is any trouble, if there's any fear, anything that you don't want to do, you'll snap out of it. You won't continue on doing what you don't want to or what you don't want to know about.
Exactly. Yeah, if you're ever uncomfortable, you just open your eyes and come out of it. So, because mm-hmm. you're always in control.
Right.
You know? We're more like the guide. Actually, we're like the guides, but it's kind of like you're the one who puts yourself into the trance.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're uncomfortable, of course, you can bring yourself out of it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I try to help you get into a good trance, but it's really you doing the work.
Mm-hmm. So when they come to you and they first talk to you and you put them under trance, do you teach them from that point to try to do a little self-hypnosis themselves so they can heal themselves at home or wherever they find that quiet space they can go to do that type of thing?
Yeah. In fact, what happens, I always tell people, if you have time, I got a funny story. There was, I'm not sure if you're familiar with, you probably have heard about affirmations where you say mm-hmm. real positive. Well, years ago, there was a tennis pro who went to a sports psychologist, and he said to the psychologist, in tennis, if the games are tied 6-6, instead of overtime, they call it going into tiebreak or tiebreaker. So he goes to the sports psychologist. He says, every time my game goes into tiebreaker, I lose. What can I do? So the sports psychologist said, what I want you to do is every day when you wake up, I want you to say out loud 25 times, I love tiebreakers. So that's an affirmation. He said, also, I want you to make a little sign that says the same thing, I love tiebreakers, put it in one of the rooms in your house where you'll see it a lot. And every time you see the sign, I want you to read it, I love tiebreakers. Well, the tennis pro wasn't too amused with this. You know, I'm paying you all this money. That's the best he got for me. Mm-hmm. He says, well, I'll try it, but I don't think too much is going to come out of that. But he does it every day. You know, he's real disciplined, so he's able to stick to it. I think it's about 6 weeks later, six weeks goes by, he calls a sports psychologist. He says, you know, I actually won a tiebreaker over the weekend, but I don't think it has anything to do with that nonsense you were telling me about. So the psychologist says, okay, we'll just keep doing it. So he keeps doing it. Another month or so goes by, and he calls the psychologist. He says, you know, I actually won 2 tiebreakers over the weekend, but I'm still not convinced it's because of the stuff you told me. So the psychologist said, okay, well, keep doing it. So he keeps doing it. About another month or so goes by, and now he's in one of the main tournaments, he's in one of the big ones. And he's in a game against another real top pro, and it's a real close game. And he catches himself thinking, if I can just get this game to tiebreaker, I know I can win. And then he realized, whoa, my whole attitude has totally changed now. You know, instead of dreading tiebreakers, he's kind of like looking forward to it. So that kind of shows the power of affirmations. So I like to tell people that story because with affirmations alone, you can make these big changes. But if you learn self-hypnosis and then you combine that with doing the affirmations will work much faster and you'll be able to make changes at a much faster rate. So I always show people how to do the self-hypnosis. Then I give them a sheet of paper that has a variety of affirmations on it that they can look at and choose from, or I tell them you can make your own affirmations, or there's zillions of them on the internet if you want, for almost any topic, you know, stress reduction, improving your sports performance, whatever. You can check it on the internet. Now, and also, if you are going to make your own affirmations, basically there's only two or three main rules. One is it has to be positive. So instead of saying, I'm not going to smoke anymore, you'd say something like, I am a non-smoker. It's got to be said in a positive way. The subconscious doesn't hear the word don't. So if you say, I don't smoke anymore, the subconscious won't hear don't. It just hears, you know, I'm still smoking. Mm-hmm. So it's got to be put in a positive way. It's got to be relatively short. If it's a real long affirmation, it's not going to work too well. It goes on and on. And also, it has to be in the present moment. So if you say, I'm going to start my diet tomorrow morning, well, that's not a good affirmation because tomorrow may never come. So right. It's got to be right now. Right now, I am easily losing the excess weight, or I'm getting a wonderful night's sleep. It's happening now. Mm-hmm. And the last thing is it has to be somewhat believable. So if you made an affirmation, I am going to be a billionaire, or I am a billionaire, you know, and you don't believe that's even possible, then that would not be a good affirmation because you have to believe it's within the realm of possibility. But with those few rules, you can create any affirmation you want to make. Mm-hmm. So you can make your own affirmations, put yourself into self-hypnosis. And then also I tell people that once you put yourself into the self-hypnosis, you can either give yourself permission to open your eyes and read the affirmations, or you could put them on a recording, like a digital recorder, and then you can just, you're in self-hypnosis, you just press the play button and you listen to the affirmations. If you read them, it would be, I am, like I am very calm, tranquil, peaceful, relaxed. But if you put them on a recorder, you want it to say, you are, you know, every day you are getting better and better, or you are a great hockey player, or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. or your concentration keeps getting better and better.
Right. Now, again, you try to keep it personal. You want them to say, I am, as opposed to having a third party say, you are, correct? Something right. like that. Try to keep it personal to them saying, I am this or I am that.
Correct.
Right?
Right. But if, like I said, if you put it on a recorder, you can say you are that mm-hmm. because that voice is talking to you.
Right.
So you can do it either way.
Right. But it has to be within the realm of possibility. So
correct.
Like you said, maybe you're not a very good hockey player, but you say, I'm a professional hockey player. It's not necessarily going to happen then, right?
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you really don't believe it, if mm-hmm. you know, you think there's not much chance of that ever happening, then it's probably not going to be a good affirmation.
But you could say, I am a better hockey player.
Yeah,
or
right.
something like
I'm getting
that.
Better and better every day mm-hmm. would be a good one. Or my skills keep improving, or my concentration. I'll tell you a funny story. I do play table tennis. Mm-hmm. And this guy I played table tennis with when we first started playing. Now, there's a difference between ping pong and table tennis. Ping pong is, you know, the cheap paddles,
yeah,
and you just
right.
hit the ball around. But right. this guy was really into it. I mean, he had really expensive paddles. Some of these paddles cost $200 or more. The finest table tennis ball. There's different kinds of balls, cheaper ones, more expensive ones. He had the best table tennis balls, a real expensive table. And he had taken quite a few lessons, so he knew exactly how to do the right strokes and everything. So when I first started playing him for like two and a half years, he would just kick my butt every time we played. And finally I started, you know, he'd teach me a few things once in a while. And I finally started getting better to the point where I could actually beat him one out of three sets. But still, he always beat me two out of three. Mm-hmm. Then I came across a little CD that talked about how to improve your tennis using hypnosis. And I thought, well, if you can improve your tennis game, I bet I can improve my table tennis game using hypnosis or self-hypnosis. So I started kind of modifying that script a little bit so I could use it for myself. And I'd make myself affirmations like my concentration just keeps getting better and better. I make great shots. I constantly keep him on his toes or whatever, just, you know, a variety of things. Mm-hmm. And shortly after I started using the self-hypnosis, I started beating him 2 out of 3 instead of him beating me 2 out of 3. So to me, that was proof, wow, this really does work.
Yeah, and it was payback, right? You felt better. It's good all the way around because you feel better about yourself, too. Like, yeah, I'm beating this guy, you know, right, so there, right. You know.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, right. There's your fancy equipment and stuff, you know.
Because up to then, no mercy.
That's right, yeah. Well, that's interesting, too. And for the affirmations, is there a certain number that, I mean, do you do more than 3 or do you try to keep it maybe just 1 or 2 or 3? In other words, if you do too many affirmations, you tend to forget them or
right.
It's not really as powerful?
That's correct. Yeah, I usually tell people to just maybe use anywhere from 3 to 7, mm-hmm. just not too many, because like you say, if you use too many, it's going to be overwhelming.
Right.
And to say more than once also, same a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And when we teach people self-hypnosis, we tell them to practice it every day for 21 days because there's, you've probably heard about the 21 day.
Right, exactly. I've heard that, where that new habit or whatever becomes ingrained in your brain. But I don't know. Sometimes it's been my experience. It hasn't necessarily worked, but I don't know. Is that something that you've experienced that it really is true?
I've read some studies about it, and they said that the key thing is you don't miss a day.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do it for 21 days straight, or some say 30 days, and then you do create new neural pathways. So that part is true. If you miss a day, however, that can, you may have to go back to square one. So if you do a week and then you miss the next day, then that kind of wrecks the whole thing. So you want to make sure you don't miss a day.
Right. You have to do it consistently.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Again, I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Phil Rosenbaum. He is a certified hypnotist and limited licensed counselor. Now, when you do inductions, how do you do it? I mean, some people will try to take you out of the top of your head into the sky. Some people will try to take you, you know, downstairs. Some people will try to get you to your so-called happy place. What is your general way of getting people to go under?
Usually I do something that's very similar to what they call progressive relaxation. And you can start at the head and work down to your feet, or start at the feet and work up to your head. And you're kind of like relaxing body part by body part. Like first you're relaxing your feet, and then your ankles and your legs and your muscles and all the way up to your head. And then that's part one, and then I might then have them imagine going down a set of stairs, and every step they go down is taking them deeper and deeper relaxed. And then also sometimes we add what they call deepeners, and these are things that just help you go into an even deeper state. So, for example, I might have you imagine, okay, on the count of one, I want you to feel very relaxed. On the count of two, I want you to just feel you're coming up just a little bit. On the count of three, I want you to go back down and go even deeper. 4, up just a little bit. 5, down, deeper, you know, that kind of stuff. So the deepener helps them to go into a deeper state of hypnosis. So I usually use 2 or 3 different kinds of things together, mm-hmm. to get them in a pretty nice relaxed state. And the nice thing about hypnosis is normally, not always, but in my case, almost always, people are very, very relaxed. In mm-hmm. fact, almost everybody who's gone through the process said they were amazed at how relaxed they felt. Oh, let me tell you a funny story. When I was taking my basic hypnosis training class, I had a husband and wife team who were teaching the class, and the wife was able to go into a very, very deep state of hypnosis. She was like what they call that 7 or 8% who can go very, very right. deep. They used to call it, there used to be a name for them that you would call them, the hypnotic virtuosos, because
oh, really?
They could go so deep. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, She's the kind of person, she could go to the dentist and tell the dentist, just give me a few minutes to put myself into hypnosis, and then you can do whatever you need to do, and I don't need any drugs or any gas or anything. And she wouldn't feel any pain at all because she could put herself into such a deep state.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one day, the husband wanted to demonstrate what he called the deepest level of hypnosis you can go into. And I think he called it the coma state or something. He had a kind of weird name for it. But his wife was willing to volunteer, so he's going to put her into this very, very deep state. It's the deepest you can go before falling. Any deeper, you'd fall asleep. Okay? So he puts her into this very, very deep state. And, I mean, you could just lift her hand and watch it fall. She was just totally gone. And then when she's in this very, very deep state, and then he's talking to the class, we're all sitting around in a circle, he's talking to the class about how you might, when you might want to use this, like if a person had something very, very traumatic happen when they were young, this might be a real good way to help them find out what did happen exactly, and to be able to recall the incident so that they could kind of deal with it and get it out of their system, so to speak, out of the subconscious. Anyhow, so he's explaining this stuff, and then after a few minutes, he says, okay, he turns to his wife, says, okay, I'm going to count to three, and on the count of three, I want you to come out of trance. So he says, one, two, three, wake up, and nothing happens. She's just still, like, totally gone.
Mm-hmm.
So then he says it a little bit louder. I'm going to count to three. On the count of three, I'm going to say, wake up, and I want you to come out of trance. One, two, three, wake up. And again, nothing happened. And, you know, the class is sitting around, so this doesn't look so good for him. You know?
Right, right.
So then he's thinking for a second, and he realized what's going on, and he says to her, okay, I'm going to count to three and say wake up, and if you don't wake up, I'm never going to take you this deep again. And he says, one, two, three, wake up. And she came out of trance. So we asked her, we said, what was happening? How come you didn't come out of trance? Didn't you hear him? She says, oh, I heard him, but I just felt so great. I didn't want to come out of trance, so I ignored him.
Mm-hmm. She was so relaxed that she liked her
special
place or whatever.
It was like a little bliss, you know.
Right,
Don't bother me. Just
yeah,
leave me alone.
Her moment of zen, and
yeah,
she was happy. Right? Yeah. Well, because I was just curious, you know, as far as your induction, because people are different, and do you kind of find out what people like? I mean, sometimes they don't want to go deeper. Maybe they want to rise above, maybe go above their heads, maybe go into the clouds, the sky. Do you do anything like that? Do you kind of tell or find out what people prefer?
Well, I do. There's, for example, some people maybe don't, to them being on the beach is not relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I generally tell you, just imagine yourself on a beautiful beach. Well, some people get sunburned on the beach, so
right.
that would not be a good thing to
right.
have them imagine.
Right.
So you want to kind of get a little idea of what they're comfortable, what would be an ideal place for them to go to where there's no problems, no worries, you know, what's their most beautiful place in the world, and then you kind of take them to that. Now, in terms of having them go out of the body, I'm not sure if you ever heard of a lady named Dolores Cannon.
Not really. No.
Okay. Dolores Cannon was in Arkansas. She recently passed away within the last couple months or so. And her husband did basic hypnosis. This was like 40, 50 years ago. And one of the clients he worked with actually went into a past life. And her husband didn't really know how to deal with it, or he just kind of wanted to help her with the smoking or whatever. He didn't want to really be involved with this. But Dolores, his wife, found this so fascinating, she vowed that at some point she was going to get into hypnosis and really pursue this. So a number of years later, her husband got real sick. I think he passed away, and she had the opportunity to learn hypnosis. And so she started doing it, and she was working a lot with past life hypnosis. And past life hypnosis can be very, very beneficial for a number of reasons, because a lot of times things have happened to us in you have to be open to the idea to begin with, but a lot of times things have happened to people in a previous life that's still affecting us today.
Mm-hmm.
As an example, I know you mentioned the lady in the Brian Weiss book. People who have a terrible fear of water, quite often it's because they've had a terrible thing happen to them. They maybe drowned or something very bad happened in water, and And as a result, now they're still terrified of water, even though this event may have happened hundreds of years ago. So with past life hypnosis, you can go back and find out what did happen. And once the person realizes, oh, that's why I'm so terrified, usually they're able to give up that fear and it's not a problem anymore. So past life in and of itself can be very, very helpful. But in addition, what Dolores found is that she could take him to a higher realm. She called it the subconscious, but she didn't mean it the way Freud meant the subconscious. She meant a much broader kind of thing. A lot of us, I think, would call it the superconscious, you know, where there's like guides or angels or masters, ascended masters, whatever. And at that level, she said, you can get all kinds of answers and information. So in her, the way she would do the hypnosis is first you take a person to a past life, and then because they're so deep, she was able to get them to go to this higher level, and she'd take them to this, what I call the superconscious level. And at that level, she'd ask all kinds of questions and they'd get answers. Now, before the session, she would tell the people to make a list of questions. So they would come in with, well, what's my purpose, for example? Mm-hmm. Or should I stay in this marriage? Or should I move to a different location? Or why did I have the parents I had? Or why did I get this terrible illness happen to me? Or, you know, why did I have all these horrible events happen? And so they'll make a list of questions, and then Dolores would get them into this super conscious state, and then she'd ask for permission to talk to the guides, and they're almost always willing to talk, to give you, you know, to answer your questions. And then she would say, Nancy, for example, wanted to know if she should stay in this line of work or if something, you know, would be better for her. And then the guys they talk through the person. Mm-hmm. So if you were like the person, you would be talking, but it's really their words that are flowing through you. So it's like what some call channeling. It's like their information is being channeled through you. So you're talking, but it's really their words. Mm-hmm. And amazing information comes through these guides. For example, one time I had a guy who he was in his own, he had created his own business in IT business. He was making a lot of money with computer business. But he said he wasn't sure if that's what he was supposed to be doing with his life. So one of our questions was, is he in the right line of work or should he be doing something else? And the guide said, no, that's not what he's supposed to be doing with his life. In fact, he should get out of that job as soon as possible. He's supposed to be a writer. He should be traveling around giving talks and doing his writing. And he should just totally forget that what he's doing now, because that's not why he's here. And so when he came out of trance, I said to him, I said, did that kind of surprise you, the answers you got? And he said, actually, it didn't. He said, I kind of suspected I should be doing something like that, but I really needed that confirmation. That was really helpful. So people get amazing kinds of answers from, and not only that, but Dolores has gotten a number of healings. I mean, amazing healings. She had one lady who came in. The lady could hardly walk. Her knee was so bad, she was on a cane, barely able to walk. And when Dolores did her session, she always has people lay down, like on a bed. And so she got to she did the past life, then she got to the higher part, the superconscious, and she asked the guides, I think first she asked why the lady had that problem, whatever, and it turns out a lot of the cartilage was gone behind her knee.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dolores said, can you help this lady with this problem? And I guess at first they didn't respond real quickly, and Dolores said, well, I know you people can do anything. I know you can help her. So they said, well, okay, well, we'll see what we can do. And they actually rebuilt the cartilage under her knee, and when the session was over, the lady was able to get off the bed without her cane and walk like a normal person.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how amazing. And Dolores, she does a lot of stuff with healings, or she did. She's helped people who had AIDS. She's helped people with cancer. She's helped people who've had all kinds of stomach problems. I mean, you name it. She's been able to get healings for a ton of different kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always happen, but a lot of times it does. And she said when it does not happen, for example, if someone has an illness and they have that illness, that's part of their life lesson. Like if somebody came in blind, that's their life lesson. Well, that's not going to be healed because that's their whole life is going to be devoted to dealing with this issue. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, you don't have to keep that problem, and the guides can help you get rid of it.
Right.
So there's one funny story where Dolores was about to do. Is it okay if I digress a little bit?
Yes, go ahead.
There's one funny story where Dolores was going to do a group past life hypnosis, and her method involves a lot of visualization, like see yourself entering your house. What do you see inside the house? That kind of stuff. And so, just before she gets ready to do it, in comes this blind lady, and she's thinking, "Oh, this could be a problem, you know, because a blind lady, she might not be able to visualize it all." And then, just a few minutes later, in comes a second blind lady, and Dolores says, "Oh, this is not good."
Yeah.
So she walks up to the two women and she says, "You know, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but I don't think this session's going to work for you because, you know, you have to be able to visualize, and obviously." You know, it turns out they were blind from birth. How could you possibly visualize? And the one lady said, "Oh, we can visualize. In fact, blue is my favorite color." And so Dolores says, "Well, how do you even know what blue looks like because you've been blind from birth?" And the lady says, "Oh, I remember that from my last life." Mm-hmm. So there was no problem.
Right. Well, I have heard that, you know, even blind people can dream in color and that kind of thing. Uh-huh. Maybe that's why it is, because of a past life. But I've heard of other situations where, you know, one lawyer was blind, and the reason he was blind because in the Middle Ages, he was a warrior that would put out other people's eyes using a hot skewer, you know, would, you know, sear their eye. And because of that, one lifetime he was blind, because what you're saying, he had to go through that and he had to learn what it was like to be blind, to have somebody, you know, do that and to go through that kind of existence. And then obviously that's how you learn.
Right. Yeah. In fact, one of the ladies who was blind in Dolores's class wanted to find out why that happened to her, and a very similar thing happened to her. Mm-hmm. She had been a cruel leader who took people's eyes out, mm-hmm. and now it kind of like karma was coming back to her.
Right, right.
You know, so.
But also I think that a lot of people that come to you, they just assume that their problems stem from this lifetime or what they've experienced so far,
right?
Whether it be a childhood thing or whatever the case may be. Are people often surprised sometimes when they go into trance and discover that it's something that happened to them perhaps hundreds of years ago?
Now, normally, if people don't come in for a past life, I do what's just called a basic regression, where we have them kind of go back into this life to find out where the problem originated. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, it has happened in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people who want a past life somehow sense that something happened in a past life. But usually when people don't ask for it, I don't normally have to take them to a past life. That would be more like a fluke if that were to happen. Mm-hmm. Usually, like, you know, like they say, when we're growing up till the age of about 4 or 5, it's kind of like most of our mind is subconscious. It's not even conscious. And we're just taking in everything our parents and siblings are saying to us. And a lot of that's not very positive stuff. You know, we get a lot of negative messages. And as an example, say a little girl, her dad, every time her dad comes home, he screams at her, slaps her, beats her around, whatever, and for no apparent reason. But the little girl's got to try to make sense of it. You know, why is my dad doing that? And after a while, she kind of comes to the conclusion, I must be a bad person. You know, otherwise, why would he do this to me?
Right.
So we call this a core issue. It's a core, a deep-seated belief. And unless she deals with that, she's going to go through her whole life believing, you know, there's something wrong with her, that she's a bad person. And with hypnosis, we can go back, we can find out where that belief came from. We can, you know, show her you weren't at fault. It was your father who had the problem. And there was nothing wrong with you. And then we can kind of help them to kind of let go of this belief. And that's what's hurting so many people, is we have so many negative core issues. And you wouldn't believe the areas. It involves money. You know, people have all kinds of core issues about you know, it not being okay to be financially successful.
Right.
There's a funny story where this little kid says, I don't want to be rich when I grow up. And the mother says, well, why not? She says, well, because, you know, my grandfather's rich and he's crazy. I don't want to be like that. And so she had to explain to him, well, you know, there's a lot of rich people who are not crazy. And so she talks about some of these movie stars with tons of money or whatever. And she says, is that person crazy? No. Is that person crazy? No. So see, that's not true. You can have a lot of money and not have to be crazy. So the point is, we have a lot of limiting beliefs, and hypnosis can really help find out where this stuff is coming from. And then we can kind of release it. We call it reframing it, challenging it, whatever. So it's not going to be a problem for you anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do a lot of doing, you know, because in fact, even weight loss, a lot of people, I don't know if you've heard of the expression yo-yo dieters.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A lot of times people will, they go on a diet, they'll lose weight, they'll keep it off for a while, but then after a while it comes back up. Then they go on a diet, they lose the weight, comes back up, you know, we call it yo-yo dieting. And the reason I think that happens is because they're not getting to the real reason, the why they have that problem in the first place. And until they address the real issue, the real reason why they have the problem, they're just going to continue to have this yo-yo dieting problem. But when they can go back and find out, you know, what happened, why are you having problems? Like, a lot of times, for example, it's for protection. Like, apparently in a lot more cases than I ever expected, children were molested when they were growing up,
mm-hmm.
and they feel that by putting on a lot of weight, it's going to protect them. And as long as they have that belief, they're not going to get rid of that weight. You know, mm-hmm. they can go on and, you know, say, oh, I got to get rid of this weight. But really, subconsciously, they don't want to get rid of it because they think it's keeping them safe. So until we go back and find out exactly why they have the problem and that there's other ways to be safe besides being overweight, then you can release the problem and, you know, get rid of it for good.
Mm-hmm.
But you really have to, in my opinion, you really have to find out what's really the real reason for the problem and, mm-hmm. and address that. Otherwise, you're just kind of wasting time, in my mm-hmm. opinion, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And excuse me, one last thing is you know, we have both our conscious mind and our subconscious. And a lot of people use the analogy of an iceberg. The tip of the iceberg is our conscious mind. And what's all the stuff that's buried below is our subconscious. So we have tons of beliefs and thoughts in our subconscious that we're not even aware of. And that's where all the habits we have come from. That's where a lot of the dysfunctional thinking comes from. It's in our subconscious. And one of the reasons, like, you know, when New Year's comes around, people make all these New Year's resolutions. Okay, I'm going to definitely start my exercise program, or I'm going to definitely lose some weight, or I'm quitting smoking, you know, they make all these New Year's resolutions, and what they're doing is they're strictly using their willpower, which mm-hmm. is the conscious mind, and that works up to a point, but sooner or later, the willpower is going to weaken, and somebody's going to offer them, hey, you want a cigarette? Well, I've looked at the problem. Okay, I'll have one, and then before they know it, they're right back into it, and the problem is, it's because they're dealing with the conscious mind and not the subconscious. And whenever, if you want change, permanent change, you have to address both the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. So if, for example, for the analogy with the New Year's resolutions, if you say, okay, I'm going to quit smoking, and the conscious mind is 100%, you know, for it, yes, I'm definitely quitting, but nobody's informed the subconscious about this decision, and the subconscious says, I don't think I want to quit. Well, anytime there's a conflict with your conscious mind and your subconscious mind, the subconscious always wins. So unless you get the subconscious in agreement or in sync with the conscious mind, permanent change is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to deal with the subconscious and get it in agreement with the conscious mind. And then once they both agree, oh, yeah, losing weight would really be a good idea, that's when you can make the change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why I don't think most New Year's resolutions don't work, because they're strictly willpower or mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff, and that
right.
just doesn't
Well, the only New Year's resolution that I make is not to make any resolution. So that's one I can keep. I know every year I've had that for many years. Very proud that I've kept that. So,
you know, that's a positive.
That's right. Yeah. Very successful there. Again, I just wanted to tell everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. The show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My guest this month is Phil Rosenbaum. And he is a certified hypnotist and limited licensed counselor. Now, I imagine most people probably come to you to either stop smoking or lose weight. Is that the most popular thing?
Those are the two most common issues that people bring. But I think now people are starting to realize that hypnosis can do a lot more than just weight loss, because I'm getting more people for anxiety issues, for stress reduction. Some people for school or for, I should tell you an interesting thing about school. There's, as I said, we teach people how to do self-hypnosis. And when you're in self-hypnosis, you can actually open your eyes and you can actually read. You could read a book and still be in self-hypnosis. And so we teach a lot of people who want to do better in school. We show them how to do self-hypnosis, then we tell them to start reading some of their books, their textbooks, while they're in this self-hypnotic state, because what's happening is the information is kind of going right into your subconscious, and the subconscious remembers everything and never forgets. So then you've been studying, all this information is going into your subconscious. Then when you go to take your exam, you can put yourself back into this self-hypnosis, and you got to take the exam, and you can recall all this information. So it's a great, great, great way to do well in school.
Mm-hmm. Is that what people sometimes call a photographic memory, perhaps, or something like that? You just remember it so much and so vividly that it comes to you when you need that information?
That might be what's happening. I'm not positive what the exact dynamics of the photographic memory are. Mm-hmm. But this does definitely help people remember a lot more than if they just do their normal studying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would imagine they've probably have done studies on people that have tried to either quit smoking or lose weight through hypnosis. Mm-hmm. What are those results? I mean, are they positive? Do the vast majority of people really lose weight and keep it off? Mm-hmm. Again, you can lose mm-hmm. weight, but the key is to keep it off.
Right. Now, there's been tons of what they call peer-reviewed studies, and I don't know exactly what the statistics are, but I do know that they have found that hypnosis has been the most effective method to help people quit smoking. It's better than the patch, it's better than quitting cold turkey, it's better than taking drugs, whatever. So it is the most effective, but I don't know exactly what percentage of people are successful. One of the problems is that if somebody comes to see you for quitting smoking, and some people would see him one time, some people see him three times, for example. Well, if you only see him one time and they seem like, okay, they're good, and they go, but you don't get any feedback. So there's no way to know, you know, have they quit for a week? Have they quit for a year? You know, have they quit permanently or what? Because if we don't see the person anymore, we don't really know what's happened with them.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I like to see people at least three different times, because then we can find out how helpful was the first session. We can also do some of that going back to the, we call it subconscious mind healing, where we have the subconscious kind of go back and find out what is the original problem, you know, what caused you to smoke in the first place, and then we can help you to, you know, get rid of that issue, you know, so it's not a problem for you anymore. So I think it's definitely, hypnosis is definitely helpful for smoking, but I can't tell you exactly what. Anyone who says it's 100%, well, that's ridiculous.
Right.
But I don't know exactly what the odds are.
Right.
But it is effective for a lot of people.
Right. Well, nothing is 100%, I don't
right.
think, you know, primarily.
I know.
But when you do hypnosis, do you suggest to people that they don't want that cigarette or it's bad for them? Or how do you work it so that the subconscious accepts that idea or the fact that you want to lose weight?
Okay, well, we tell them a lot of times is to find out why they gain the weight. They already know that they want to lose the weight. And they probably, a lot of them already know tons of diets. In fact, usually when people see a hypnotist, they've tried almost everything else first.
That's like yeah, the last resort. This is the last resort, yeah. Yeah. I guess I'll try you,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, what else is...
Yeah, right, yeah. I got nothing to lose, right, except more weight.
They probably already know hundreds of different diets that they can go on, and they know how to go about losing weight. They're just not having success with it. So that's why we help them. We try to help them find out, well, what's the real problem? What's the real cause? And then you can use whatever diet you want to use. You can follow that diet. And once you get to the cause, then you're going to be much more successful with whatever diet you want to use.
Mm-hmm, right.
I'm not sure I answered your question, though, so could you say that again?
Well, just the fact that, you know, what do you suggest to people to lose the weight? Oh. Do you tell them that you don't want the weight, or how do you get the subconscious to accept that idea?
Actually, the person... what kind of tell you why they want to lose the weight. So, like, you might come in and say, you know, I really want to lose some weight. I want to look good when I'm on the beach, or my, if it's a girl, my boyfriend really wants me to, you know, slim down, and or I'm about to get married. I want to look really good for my wedding pictures. So they'll kind of tell us why they want to lose the weight. And then when we're doing the hypnosis, we'll kind of feed that back to them, because you know you want to look good. You know you're going to feel so much healthier. You know, you want to be around for your grandchildren. What, you know, whatever they tell us, we're going to just feed it back to them, kind of, because that's the reason they're...
Right, so you reinforce their desires and their wants back to them, like mirroring what they're telling you, you just enforce that or reinforce
right.
that?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and plus, you know, tell them, sometimes I might tell them, and now you also... find that water is becoming a favorite beverage for you. You know, you love drinking water. You know?
Yeah. You know? Right, right. Well, that's good to put a positive spin on it. Before we go here, I want to give you an opportunity to give out any contact information. How can people reach you if they want to?
Okay, thank you very much. My website, it's called the Self-Esteem Academy, Self-Esteem Academy. They can just go on the internet and find that. Or they could call me. My phone number is 248-688-6469. I repeat that, 248-688-6469. And they can just call me, and if they want, they should just come in for an initial session where we'll go over the whole their situation. I'll explain it all about hypnosis again. And I like the first session. I like to do this, teach people the self-hypnosis, because then they have a tool that they can work with. Plus, it's a nice way to kind of introduce them to hypnosis. It's not threatening at all. It's very relaxing, and they can see how enjoyable the whole process is. And then if they want more sessions, you know, we can do that.
Right. So, it's nothing to be afraid of.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. I'm assuming you use self-hypnosis yourself?
Yes.
And has that helped you in the past
right.
with certain situations?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, it did help me with that table tennis thing, for one.
Right.
I also use it to relax myself when I'm starting to feel anxious. There's a real good affirmation I just start to use. It's called, I'm very calm, very tranquil, very peaceful, very relaxed. Also, I teach people something that's called an anchor of relaxation. And what it is we help you get into a very, very relaxed state, so you're just feeling really nice and peaceful and relaxed. And then we have you do this thing we call an anchor. Usually we have you like squeeze a finger and thumb together. And what you're doing is you're locking in that very, very relaxing feeling. And, of course, you're going to have to practice that 21 days also.
Right. Well, it's got to be permanent, right?
Yeah. But then after you practice it, and then you're in a situation where you're starting to feel anxious, you can just use the anchor. And you don't even have to let anybody – you can even have your hands in your pocket
right.
and do the little anchor, and it will automatically start to calm you down. So that's a real neat little way to help you relax when you need to – just calm down now, you know, and be more centered, more relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're being real stressed out, do your little anchor and calm down.
Right. Right.
This doesn't have anything to do with hypnosis, but there's a very funny story where this person, there's two people talking, and somebody, an employee comes in all upset and everything, and the boss says, rule number 6. And the employee says, oh, okay, calms down, leaves. another employee a little bit later comes in and all upset about something, and the boss says, rule number six. Oh, okay, okay. And the person leaves. So the person with the boss says, can I ask you what rule number six is? And the guy says, yeah, rule number six is stop taking your life so damn seriously. And then the guy says, well, what are the other rules? And he says, there aren't any.
Yeah, so number six is it, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
Right.
But anyway.
Well, again, it's what a person is conditioned to think of, you know, using various cues or whatever. Phil, we're going to have to wrap it up, but okay. Thank you very much for being here. I could go on and on about this subject. I mean, I've got a bunch of questions I didn't even get to. I'm sure that you could keep on talking about it for, you know, a lot longer, but we'll have to stop it right now. But thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me on. I very much appreciated it.
Hello, I'm back, and I just want to thank my special guest for this month, Philip Rosenbaum, who is a certified hypnotist and limited license counselor. Very interesting. I could talk about that for hours and hours, about hypnosis and past life regression and how self-hypnosis works on a person, etc., but very interesting. I'm just glad that Philip was able to come in and do the show for this month. I also want to thank my producer, Mark Sheeler, for doing this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. With that being said, I want to thank you for listening and have a great day, everybody.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. Yo, guys and dolls out there. You're at the Malt Shop with Daddy G here on WHFR.FM, the station making the waves. And we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. And so grab your favorite squeeze, hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror,